But there's one thing that I've got. It's my man. It's my man.
Katha Pollitt is one of America's best-known feminist voices. She's known for her cultural commentary and her hard-hitting column in The Nation magazine. Recently, Pollitt turned heads with an unexpectedly revealing account of her personal life and musings about the relationship between men and women and women's friendships. Pollitt read Anne Strainchamp some of her essay, Learning to Drive, from her book of the same name.
Over there, the red Jeep. Park. Ben, my gentle Filipino driving instructor, has suddenly become severe, abrupt, commanding. A slight man, he now looms bulkily in his seat. His usually soft voice has acquired a threatening edge. In a scene that we have repeated dozens of times and that has kinky overtones I don't even want to think about, he is pretending to be the test examiner, barking out orders as we tool along the streets above Columbia University in the early morning. I am impersonating the would-be licensee, obediently carrying out instructions. Pull out when you are ready. Right turn. Left turn at the intersection. Straight. All right, Ms. Pollitt, pull over. He doesn't even need to say the words. From the rueful look on his once again kindly face, I know that I have failed. What did I do wrong this time? Did I run a red light, miss a stop sign, fail to notice one of the many bicyclists who sneak into my blind spot whenever I go into reverse? Observation, Kata, observation. This is your weakness. This truth hangs in the air like mystical advice from an Asian sage in a martial arts movie. That and lining up too far away when you go to park. The clock on the dashboard reads 7:47. We will role-play the test repeatedly during my two-hour lesson. I will fail every time. He was a genius, a pedagogical genius, this man.
The driving lessons are the framework for another story, the story of your betrayal by your boyfriend, partner of some 7 years. What happened?
Well, it's really a story about observation, that you can be the smartest person in the world, you can be very clever, you can be a very good analyst of the larger world, but when it comes to your own life, you make the same kind of clueless mistakes that we all do in our life. My story of, you know, being in love with someone who was also carrying on with other people, unbeknownst to me, this is the commonest story in the world. It's so common. Nonetheless, when this book came out, I think some people were shocked that I talked about this, that it was, you know, if you're a feminist, to a lot of people, feminist is sort of like, it's a synonym for brick wall of solid, humorless rectitude, you know? And then when it turns out that you have some of the same problems that, in fact, all of the same problems that everybody has in some form or another. Some people were quite shocked and they didn't like that. And I'm thinking, people were very critical, even that I didn't know how to drive. Can you believe that? And I'm thinking, well, I can do other things.
It's a book written by a woman who is the best known feminist writer in the country. And you're revealing something devastating that happened to you in the way in which you were tricked by a man and betrayed. And that's, I mean, you know, you read it and you sort of think, my God, if this could happen to Katha Pollitt, you know, what hope do the rest of us have?
Well, you've given me a big upgrade in my career. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. But, you know, if you look at, just for a minute, let's talk about the real great feminists of history. Mary Wollstonecraft, Simone de Beauvoir, Betty Friedan. They all had very big, stressful, complicated, stormy romantic lives. It was not simple for them, and it's not simple for anybody. We have this idea, which is related, I think, to kind of our stupid celebrity culture where, you know, there are these people out there, they're supposed to have it all figured out. And of course, they never do because life is very, very hard to figure out, and also because you are you. So you are always seeing life through the scrim of your own fears, desires, hopes, history, and all the rest of it. So
there's also a weird way in which, I mean, within feminism, we're now on what, third wave, fourth wave? I can't keep track of the waves. But daughters are perennially, you know, famously very hard on their mothers.
It's
so
true.
I think that feminist daughters have looked to our mothers to say Simone de Beauvoir, who let herself be treated terribly by Sartre, and we've said, well, that was her failing. You know, we know better. So I think, I wonder if that's part of the reaction to the story you tell.
That's part of it, but the other way of looking at Simone de Beauvoir's life is Simone de Beauvoir got to be a great writer, and that was why she was here on Earth. She was not here on Earth to, you know, have a happy marriage, you know, and have, you know, three children and be a solid, upstanding member of Parisian community. She was put here to be a much more interesting person, and so she made more dangerous choices. But I wanted to say another thing, which is that I think that people have an idea about feminists, which is something a little severe, invulnerable, you know, that stereotype of the man-hating, child-hating, hairy-legged, Birkenstock-wearing person who is very humorless and very politically correct. I think that this book, you know, really doesn't fit that stereotype at all. But what has struck me is that there are little tiny pieces of that stereotype that are true and that have come out in some people's response to the book, which is we cannot let people know that we are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. We cannot let people know, for instance, that we really do care if we have a boyfriend, you know, if we are heterosexual. And if we're not heterosexual, we care if we really have a girlfriend. And, you know, the thing is, when feminism restarted at the end of the 60s and the early 70s, women talked to each other. They talked to each other about their personal lives and their private lives. And they learned a lot from each other because everybody was feeling, oh, my God, I'm really lonely in my marriage. My husband is violent. My kids don't respect me. I'm having a terrible time at work because, you know, I can't get promoted because I'm a woman and everybody treats me so badly. But everybody thought they were the only one and that everybody else had it figured out. And it was this conversation, you know, whether you call it consciousness raising or just a new frankness among women about everything from sex to work, to parents, to clothes, to how they felt about their looks. It was unbelievably enlightening. And I feel we need to get back to a little bit more of that. And I
think we've also created a brand of feminism, as you write about, in which it's the you go girl feminism. You know, the idea that you don't criticize another woman for what she does and that whatever she wants to do, whether it's get breast enhancements or walk around, you know, in incredibly revealing clothes or have serial relationships, that it's all, what do you say, she's captain of her soul, I think you write. So you're not supposed to criticize another woman. But is that feminism or not?
Well, I think one way of seeing feminism that allows people the individual freedom that everybody wants is to see it as a social justice movement. And to see it as a movement about equality for women and social respect for women and women having the ability to make the life choices they want to. We don't have that now because women get very little support from society. And we're never going to have a society in which everybody is very buttoned down. And, you know, there are always going to be girls who want to wear, you know, that porn star T-shirt and maybe they're wearing it just to try it on. Maybe they're wearing it because they feel sexy. Maybe they're wearing it to make fun of the idea of porn stars. I mean, these things all have a lot of different meanings. But what I do notice is that young girls, for example, in a way that was not true when I was growing up, are targeted by advertisers, the fashion industry, and the media from the moment they're born. And this is very hard for them to negotiate, to feel that in addition to everything else, you have to be hot 24/7. That's the real job that society makes you do. And then they're all monitoring each other's weight in this way that is, you just want to say, here's where I think feminism really could do something. Just lay off each other. Girls, lay off each other. Because, you know, you asked a question as if, you know, there's too much approval among women for each other's choices. In fact, there's very little approval. Hmm. When people say this go girl thing, they're saying that because they feel very defensive, they're making a choice that probably may not be a very healthy choice, and they don't want to be criticized for it.
Mm-hmm. In one of the essays, Sisterhood, I think it's called, you write quite a bit about the bonds between women, and you set out to talk with a bunch of the women your ex had slept with while he was still with you. These are women who, many of them were friends or acquaintances of yours, who knowingly betrayed you.
Well, no, I wouldn't put it that way. No, I wouldn't put it quite so harshly. They were very kind and told me everything. That was good. But, you know, in that essay, Sisterhood, I'm looking at, and that title is a little ironic, but also a little not. I'm looking at, there's a quality, talking of the you go girl Oprah culture, there's a quality where women can bond around their weakness. They bond in the following way. Women, we're so warm, we're so caring, we're so sharing, we're so great. We have so much to give. We just want to love. In fact, you know, I just can't help myself. I just feel such attachment to people. And yet there are men, they're so cold and heartless. They're rats, you know. And the, one of the reviewers didn't understand that when I said men are rats, that was indirect discourse. Mm. I was making fun of that perspective. That is not my actual view. But I do think that there is a way in which women give themselves credit for something that they maybe could toughen up a little bit about, that actually it's not good to be endlessly giving and endlessly understanding of someone who is essentially a narcissist or someone who is essentially not going to do that to you. And you see this all the time. You see this in women's magazines. One of the major projects of women's magazines is to explain to women why it doesn't matter that their husband is inexpressive. You know, mm-hmm. he forgot your birthday. But that doesn't matter. He changed the oil in your car. Mm-hmm. You know, there is so much of this. And you just want to say, well, maybe it does matter if he forgot your birthday. Maybe that is kind of a message. You know, maybe you should try forgetting his birthday and see what happens.
Katha Pollitt is a columnist for The Nation magazine and the author of Learning to Drive. Anne Strainsham spoke with her.